We hope that things have been a little more peaceful and proactive at your house this week after our last week's podcast, our last episode, Understanding and Helping Our Teenage Sons, Part One. And we've really had fun discussing the whole reasons behind why that teenage son seems so incomprehensible. He's actually quite comprehensible. Hope we helped you figure that out. We're moving on now to part two, where we're going to give you 7 to-dos or 7 paradigm shifts that are going to make all the difference in his development and in your relationship with him as a parent. Enjoy.
Bags are packed. Are you ready to go? This time tomorrow we'll be on the road, riding with you in the sunnier days. I wouldn't want it any other way.
Welcome to the Wife Savers Podcast, where multi-award-winning author and global marriage educator Ramona Zabriskie provides answers to your real wife questions. Our goal is to help you appreciate your womanhood, prioritize your personal development, and craft a powerful partnership with the man in your life. Hi, I'm Hannah Allen, and I'm proud to introduce my parents, Ramona and Dale Zabriskie. And yes, this is how they talk all the time. Let's listen.
Hi, this is Dale Zabriskie, and once again, I wrangled Ramona Zabriskie in here and actually arm wrestled her to convince her to come in and do part two Understanding and Helping Teen Boys.
I think we've wrangled many a time, but there's I don't remember arm wrestling.
You don't? There's been a lot of fun, good wrangling that I recall. But the arm wrestling, I think you're right.
Let's do it. Come on, right now.
Oh,
give it to
me. You don't want to. You really don't.
Oh, chicken?
No, I just don't. Want to humiliate you here in front of everybody. Wouldn't think that good. But, you know, it reminded me of the young buck and the old bull. And
oh, right. Last week we talked about the planet Earth scenes with the two big elephants going at it. The
fighting
young and the
for
old.
Dominance.
Dominance, right. Yeah. And the two giraffes. And I never knew who to root for. Should I be rooting for the young buck who gets his chance to inherit the harem,
or that's right. Get the girls.
Do you root for the old buck?
Yeah, I tend to go for the incumbent a lot of the time.
Oh,
yeah,
kind of.
And the old, the older I get, I'm like, come on, you can hold on there. Hold on, you can do it, guy. But there is a passing of the torch.
The actual scene that I'm thinking of, the incumbent held his ground.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
good.
I can't remember if it was an elephant or giraffe, but. I don't know which one I characterize you as.
That's right. Thank you. I'm an elephant with a giraffe head or something.
But there's a lot of stuff that's Mother Nature instinct at work here when we're talking about boys, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what we were really discussing last week was all based on two questions from two different moms who had one issue, the same issue, which is they were both concerned about their teen sons, number one, but the relationship mm-hmm. those teen sons had with their old buck, with their dad. And they
I like what you just did there. You didn't realize it. You put the old bull and young buck together and you said old buck.
Oh, you're right.
Because that's how I kind of see myself, you know. I'm old, but still got that in there.
All right. It's whatever makes you happy.
Thank
honey.
You. I appreciate it.
Keep your dignity. All right. So this period of time that we call teenage or adolescence is really a bridge into adulthood. And it comes with so many changes for the adolescent girl or boy, but we're talking about boys, especially here today, that with all of that, all those changes going on that we discussed last week, it is just no wonder that they live in a perpetual state of stress and tension anytime anybody experiences change.
Yeah, it's a huge transition.
It's stressful. So you
very,
think about
very
that,
difficult.
Just heightened stress. So I want to encourage everybody, if you're just tuning in now, note the title of this. Part two.
Notice
right.
The end
you
of the title.
You really need to listen to part one, because that's where we go in depth into what's actually what these changes are that are really going on physiologically, psychologically, spiritually, and actually culturally, some unique new stuff that our boys are facing in this generation. So I think we're ready to talk about the to-dos. And certainly our listeners are like, would you please get to the to-dos? What am I supposed to do about this?
What I call the tactical as opposed to the strategy.
All right. Let's do that. Let's talk about the tacticals, the practical tacticals. Let's do that. Okay. So we do have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Seven? Holy cow. We got seven great
to-dos.
Ideas.
Great. One a day for a week.
All of these are going to be extremely helpful as a parent, either as a mother or father, in helping your teen make this crossing into adulthood.
That's right. Across that chasm that seems
without
passable.
Getting eaten by the troll under the bridge kind of thing. All right. So, number one. Hey, talk about a young buck and old buck. That story of the three billy goats Gruff.
That's it.
Yeah. You don't want to meet. There's a bigger billy goat right behind me.
Well, that's the saying, you know, when you're running away, you and your friend are running away from the lion, you don't have to, you know, run faster than the lion. You have to just run faster than your friend. that's all you got to do.
Funnier when you tell it, though. Okay. You just have to run faster than your friend.
The other guy. We don't want to make him a friend.
The guy you met in the parking lot.
The guy named Guy,
All right, here's number one, okay? Our number one idea. Stop thinking.
There you go. Number two, please.
Stop thinking of or characterizing him, your teen, or yourself, actually, as the problem. Quotation marks, right? We have a problem teen. We have a problem in our house. And it's his name is Michael.
You're personifying the problem.
Right. All right. So last week we talked about things like his sloppy diction or his sloppy bedroom or his sloppy homework, right? But all that or the sloppy sleep patterns, that's not really the problem.
Yeah, those are symptoms of the problem.
Right.
So, now for me, I had a sloppy bedroom when I was 10. Does that mean anything?
Early puberty.
I thought it was good. You know, I was early. I was early in this sense.
You were evolving.
Yes, I was.
And the evolving brain is actually that brain pruning we talked about, right? That's the problem, for one thing. Something he has no control over, right? But also we've got a problem in that we have a society and a school system and probably a mom and dad that don't really know what's going on. And that's the problem. Do you remember the Dog Whisperer? That show, the Dog Whisperer?
Cesar or something. Yeah.
Right. And it took a few episodes, but we finally caught on that the dog was never the problem. Even though the dog had these outrageous behaviors that the owners were bringing to the Dog Whisperer, say, cure our dog.
That's right. Fix our dog.
And every time, what was his... what was his treatment? What was his remedy? He didn't even deal with the dog.
No, dog's fine. Dog's not a problem here.
It was the owner.
It's the way the owners were... treating or approaching or not dealing with the dog. So you're saying all these teenagers are...
Thus, we are doing these two podcast episodes.
Brooding canines.
Right. There. Well, they are just responding to what's going on with Mother Nature in their brains and bodies.
But that's what the, you know, overcoming the challenges in our life start with knowledge, right?
Yes.
Start with understanding.
Knowledge is power.
Of what's going on. And when changes occur, especially in another person, and especially then on top of that, when that person is of your own blood, right? And boy, it's just like, what is going on?
Well, and so you need an objective and maybe a little more knowledgeable source. That's what we're trying
to do. But I like this idea of not personifying that Bobby is
the problem.
The problem.
Yes, right. We have a problem child, right? So a wise parent will reframe how they see a teen's boy's struggles. And how are you going to reframe it? As developmentally appropriate.
Developmentally appropriate.
I mean, really, when you think about the internal and external challenges, right, that they're grappling with, you're going to think of them as developmentally appropriate, just like, get this, just like a toddler's tantrums.
You hate them. It's the 2-year-old, 3-year-old
thing. You'd rather skip them, but everyone knows they just happen at that stage.
Yeah, so you're in the restaurant, the kid's going crazy, you just tell everybody. No, it's a developmentally appropriate response. I have a developmentally, look how wonderful my developing appropriately son is.
Well, Maggie Dent is the one who really makes this point. She's one of our experts, and she says, and teen boys are toddlers on steroids.
and a lot bigger.
They're bigger and louder.
That's right.
Oh, how true.
Harder
is that?
To control.
So that's part of the problem. And part of the problem is that he has this instinctive drive for independence that is in hyper mode at this point in his adolescence. Dr. Brizantino, do you mind if I say it, read a quote?
Please, okay. Read away.
Here's a quote from Dr. Brizantino. It's too good. She says, in every generation, teens need to reject their parents' ideas in favor of their own.
That's
they
absolutely.
Feel that need. Okay.
Right.
By the time a boy is 16 or 17, he will desperately seek autonomy from his parents. Every cell, this was italicized in the book, every cell in his brain seems to cry, leave me alone and let me live my own life. does anyone recognize that out there in listening land?
every parent is so scared to death. I'll just leave you alone. Go ahead. It's fine.
Yeah. Every cell in his brain seems to cry, leave me alone and let me live my own life. And she said, a teen's intense need for separation and independence is primitive and primal. You can see the same independent risk-taking behavior in other male primates when they reach puberty.
Well, we kind of think
it's just nature.
It's those silly knucklehead monkey brains, what I call our kids. It seemed to be regressing, right?
We've gone from elephants and giraffes to monkeys? Okay. Scientists believe that adolescent bravery has contributed mightily to the success of the human species. So here's a more positive way to think of it, all right?
Okay.
And that the curious, incautious, and flexible nature of the teen brain makes teens, societies, purveyors of new ideas in every generation. So the teen brain has been primed for exploration and programmed to break new ground, even if it means compromising personal safety and mother's sanity.
So true. But that's really interesting. I mean, we could sit here and go back in history.
Sort of philosophical, but yeah.
Yeah, no, but if you look at the breakthroughs of technology or medicine or whatever it is.
It's
often by a very young person who it's in that point had getting focused on this thing, right? They start to find and the brain starts to get them focused on.
You know what you're reminding me of? Amazing Grace. The movie Amazing Grace.
Wilberforce.
And remember,
his
friend who became the prime minister.
Yep, right.
Pitt?
Ashley Pitt?
No, William Pitt, I think.
Ashley Pitt's from Captain Blood.
Oh, boy, we're going to get in trouble. We're going to get the letters now. And these two were so young that they actually made a run, actually got into the parliament, and they started fighting for the abolition of slavery, among other social progressive ideas. And
they were the young bucks fighting the old bulls.
In the film, they're portrayed as saying, we're too young. We're too young to be doing something like this. William Pitt said, I think it's William. I'm sure it was Pitt. But he said, that's exactly why we should be doing it. We're too young to know any better, Isn't that true?
No, it is true.
So it's an interesting way to look at it. So that being said, it doesn't mean that you should go along with something you think is foolish or dangerous.
Yeah, you just write it off. Well, he's just developing that appropriate stuff.
Remember that immature prefrontal lobe that's not so good at making
decisions right now. Allow the boy to operate within the boundaries, right?
Well, means is you shouldn't go along with something that's really, really risky, foolish, or whatever.
Sure.
But it does mean that you shouldn't get overly swayed or worked up or seduced by...
Good idea, bad idea?
Yes, yes. Or to take personally. Don't take too personally his extreme emotions or flare-ups or positions, right? Just like you don't get all worked up and swayed and seduced and take personally. You don't take a toddler's tantrum personally.
Well, it depends.
Oh, you do?
It depends. I'm bigger than most toddlers, so. But it's true. I think about I'm the youngest in our sibling and our four kids in our family, and we're about 4 years apart. Well, what happens every 4 years?
Another baby. It sounds like.
Well, in our household, it was that way. But there's in the United States, there's an election
that
happens every 4 years.
Okay.
And every time that happened. The sibling before me chose they were able to vote. Basically, when they became 18 in that election, they always chose the candidate.
What? Opposite of your parents.
Opposite of the parents.
Holy cow.
And I was old enough to really comprehend that I was about 12 or I would have been about 14 or so.
Okay.
And boy, was that conflict in the family between my sister's choice and my parents' choice.
Okay, so did you?
No.
Really?
Actually, not in the first election.
How about that? Interesting.
Yeah.
You broke the cycle. But it's an interesting example of that.
It's that desire for independence.
Yeah. So all of that is under number one. Stop thinking of or characterizing him as the problem. All right. Now that we understand all of that. We're going to break now for just a minute so I can invite you to my free live masterclass, Understanding Your Husband and Sons. In my work with women in over 70 countries, I found that most of us, when it comes to our husbands and sons, think like Carol in Kenya.
I was expecting him to think like me, behave like me.
Or Dana in Utah.
Shouldn't we just be the same and shouldn't we just agree?
Or Anne in California.
I grew up in a culture where there was a lot of eye rolling and sighing about guys.
And that's too bad, because when we act or react based on false expectations, we end up feeling like Catherine.
I didn't feel I could relate to him because I didn't understand him.
Or getting riled up like Carol.
Made me mad. It's crazy. It was frustrating, you know?
And acting like Anne.
I used to think he should know what I wanted without me having to ask.
Which just erodes our relationships and blows up our dreams. So that's why I created Understanding Your Husband and Sons. A super fun, eye-popping deep dive into his brain, body, and emotional makeup. Women have been coming from all over the world and coming away from our time together with an exhilarating sense of hope and power, because now women like Amber, Anne, Dana, and Allison understand
how to communicate my needs, you know, how to be clear about it, how not to be run around, how not to manipulate.
The way I communicate with him isn't any more aggressive or threatening to him.
I can see why he's reacting or why he's responding that way.
That's helped to avoid a lot of the hurt feelings that I used to have.
So if, like Jeannie in Canada, you're thinking,
okay, I need to reboot how I think about marriage and men and how they're loved.
Please join me at this free live masterclass, Understanding Your Husband and Sons. I'll teach you things you have never heard before and that you won't hear anywhere else. Science and strategies that will knock your socks off and make all the difference in your relationships.
And it just changes everything about how I see him.
There's this huge potential that I was not really tapping into because I didn't fully understand it.
We're both so much happier now.
And in how you see yourself.
My confidence as a woman has skyrocketed.
We've made it so easy. Just go to wifesavers.org/masterclass and choose a day and time. I'll meet you there and even answer your questions live. Because like Carol in Kenya or Cindy in Argentina, you'll want to be able to say,
oh, we
you're wired differently. And that's the beauty of life.
And it set me free. It allowed me to say, okay, I understand now. And I loved him more than ever.
Wifesavers.org/masterclass. Here's number two. Stop shaming or shutting him down.
That's easy for a parent to do.
Many parents, me included, back in those days, want their teen son to just stop being extreme or moody or angry because here's some of the reasons I thought of thinking of myself. It makes them personally uncomfortable as a parent. You know, it's frightening. It's threatening. That our own letter writer said that very thing, that she was so scared and she cried and it seemed to make everything worse. Right. So that's one reason you want to kind of just shut it down. And it upsets the family ecosystem, right? Her daughter ran to her room and closed the door. Right. She was so scared.
Yeah.
A parent may be worried that a teen's moodiness or anger is a sign of defective character or development. And so they just wanted to stop. Stop doing that.
He was such a nice boy. What happened?
Yeah, he was such a cute little boy. He used to smell good.
Well, some of the time. After you got done with them, they smelled good.
That's what I used to say to my boys when they come out of their bedrooms after playing drums really hard on a summer day or something. I come out, you used to smell good. It was the baby powder I put on.
That's right.
A parent might be worried that it'll be a harmful pattern that could...
Yeah, it's beginning of the end.
Yes, you think impede about that. Their future prospects.
Yeah, and also, I think it's a cultural thing. It's a relationship thing. If you're in a group of other families, you know, the people you associate with, and your child is starting acting so weird or in your mind different, it can be embarrassing.
No, that's true.
Right?
And Even with a
cultural,
teen, and social kind of teen or something,
exactly.
Right?
It's hard, really hard to go through.
But all those reactions, that desire to just stop them or shut them down, can actually be really harmful. That can be a mistake. So remember that Maggie Dent, we read this quote last week about how many boys are carrying deep shame still because of this very thing. They're being told in so many ways and words that their emotions are wrong or bad.
Yeah.
And then it translates into, but I can't help this. My limbic system, my muscles, my blah, 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 explode. I've ruined this relationship. Oh, stupid me. I have no idea how to fix it. Stupid me. They attack themselves and then they start carrying that shame that can affect them for the rest of their lives, actually, as growing men. So it's important to remember that no matter how nonsensical and frustrating our team's feelings may seem to us, how do they feel to him?
Yeah, it's really, really hard.
They're real to him.
As a parent, you take it personally.
Yes.
And
that's why we talked about not doing that.
Yeah, not doing that, but it's really, really hard to think about, well, what's going on for them?
Remember our letter writer that had the confrontation, actual physical confrontation between dad and teenage son, that her husband told her later. Do you remember what he said? That it was the worst day of his life. He took it very
impactful,
very personally. But they're real and important to the teen. And here's the deal. Discharging emotions safely, especially anger, can be helpful to our teen boys. If they can discharge that anger in a
good
safe
environment,
place,
right,
where it's not going to permanently damage relationships. Mm-hmm. And that, you're right, it takes a really big parent to maneuver or navigate that kind of situation.
Yeah, I think of my own at that time where I did, to your point, discharge that frustration. It's a good word for
it
that.
It is a good word.
In the wrong places with the wrong people and doing the wrong things.
Mm. And then, it could drive him into the wrong
kind
of choices.
So I really like
kind
that
of
idea
company.
About a safe environment, a safe place to be able to go through that.
So shutting it down, that temptation, and making it wrong, what it's going to do is just make it worse later. So
You just ignore it, right?
No, you don't ignore it, but you help him through it.
Yeah,
and you take it in stride, like we're talking about the toddler tantrum, right? That it's you're to be expected at this stage of development. So we need to keep in mind that most boys have been conditioned to believe that anger is an acceptable warrior kind of emotion, like, and it's a manly sort of emotion. So here's the deal. You just keep it all in perspective. This is a stage. My mom used to say that. It's just a stage. I remember her saying that about when I get frustrated with my brother. She'd go, it's just a stage. It'll pass. And it's true. It takes the development of that prefrontal lobe in a kid's brain for them to have the capacity to make more mature choices, different choices. And you just got to let that brain, it grows slow, but you got to let it happen, right? So stop shaming or shutting. Those words will help you remember. Stop shaming or shutting him down. So far we have stop thinking of or characterizing him as the problem, reframe, and stop shaming or shutting him down. Here's number three.
Okay.
Get to the core issues. We keep talking about how these extreme positions or emotions are symptoms. Where are they coming from?
Well, that's what he's saying. This goes with the you're not defining or personifying him as the problem, right?
Right.
Got to get to the specific issue.
So the flare-up, let's call it, or whatever, is a reaction most times to feeling rejected or disappointed or confused or scared or unloved or misunderstood or disconnected or full of grief or sad or ugly or embarrassed or ashamed or useless or powerless or, you know, out of control. It's going to come out as anger at mom or whatever.
Yeah, I remember growing up at that time. I did not want to go to school, and I said I was sick.
Yeah.
And I remember my mom taking me.
That's not too original.
Right. Well, by the time I got down to the end of the alphabet, everything was used. So mom took me to the doctor, and the doctor says, nothing wrong with this. You know. And I look back, and I realize that I didn't want to go to school because of my acne.
Oh,
I thought I was ugly. It was so bad. You know, every kid goes through that, right? And it eventually went away.
Did you ever tell anyone that that's
no.
what it was?
No,
of course you didn't.
No, I'm too embarrassed.
No, yeah, you're not good.
But I made my mother pay for going to the doctor for no reason.
Wow. Well, that was a cover. That excuse was just a cover for your anxiety.
Exactly.
Right? And so they're going to be creative maybe in the ways they manage their heightened stress. So you got to get to the core issues, like the grief or the loneliness or the damaged sense of pride. Or there's just so many reasons that a teen uses a mask to cover or hide behind. That's why you can't look at what's happening on the surface as the issue. It never is. Some boys will rather fight with the anger than other people. So they'll swallow the anger. And then what happens? It builds up an enormous resentment. Resentment to whatever they think the source of their grief is, right? And it'll come out later as an even stronger rage.
I was just going to say that. I mean, you're looking back, and I think every parent who's gone through this can look back and go, there were these episodes, right? Maybe it's these episodic situation where there were these, and then it got quiet for a while.
And then when it gets quiet, at least I remember, and it was too quiet.
Yeah, like,
and
what's
I'd
wrong?
Be like,
what's wrong?
Why isn't he talking to me? There must be something wrong. He's just going straight to his room and closing the door. Bam, bam, bam. What's going on in there? Why don't you talk to me anymore?
Yeah, but then it explodes again.
And then it explodes again.
And it can become, like you say, each time can become even worse.
Yep. So we're going to seek out, consider, make allowance for, address, mitigate, whatever. Whatever is possible, we're going to get to the real core issue. And here's the important part. When you do that, you're going to try really hard to be authentic and respectful of each other's opinions. I mean, I'm talking about being respectful of a teen's point of view. And when you say that, when I say respectful, my students know what that means. That means considering them equal.
Yeah,
and they
that's
get the
really
sense,
hard.
That's
for a
really
parent.
Hard, but they yeah. get the sense from you that you're genuinely interested, that you're genuinely considering.
Mm-hmm.
You're giving them full consideration. You're not thinking, what a stupid idea, and then jumping right, in the middle of their
yeah.
sentence.
Their feelings, their ideas have worth and have value.
Right. Because here's the deal. Some teens and parents, they never stop talking about what the other one is doing wrong. And so it just turns into white noise. Just, you know, speaking of white noise, did you know this? This is so interesting. Scientists have learned that during male fetal brain development, testosterone affects the formation of the auditory system.
What?
And I know.
I'm sorry.
So funny. And I know you're really interested in all things auditory. Auditory system and the connections with the within the brain. The testosterone is affecting it, making it inhibit unwanted noise and repetitious acoustic stimuli more than the female brain does. So that just means.
What? Yeah, would you define that for us, please?
I was trying to be nice because moms don't want to hear this. Mom, if you're going blah 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 blah.
That's what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like to a teen boy.
That's what you're saying. Yeah.
It his brain will just inhibit the unwanted noise and a repetitious acoustic stimuli. Mom.
Repetitious.
I.e. mom saying the same thing over and over and over again.
Acoustic stimuli. Clean your room. Pull the pants up. Turn your hat around. Stop
and
doing that.
And he's like, white noise.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a hoot. I love that. That just explains so much. Everybody's out listening going, oh, now I understand.
It's fun to laugh about it, but it's sure aggravating when you're in the middle of it. But here's the bottom line. This could be a meme. There is no motivation to listen if listening equates to hearing negatives about yourself.
Yeah, if that's
listen,
all.
Listen, how come you never listen to me? Because all I hear is negatives about me. Yeah. Why would I listen?
What is my motivation, right? What is important for me if this is what's going to happen? Yeah.
That's the actor and you come out,
what is my motivation?
The
method actor.
Sorry, everybody. That really got my funny bone. All right. So. We're going to try very hard to clarify the situation from both perspectives, parent, child, really, really tune into his point of view rather than fight.
Yeah, wouldn't you say that in all your work that you've done, even with women, but certainly for all the reasons we've talked about and
women
in the
who
previous
are married to teen boys that never
married
grew up.
To teen boys. That's a different show. We'll be doing that in a few weeks. But that if you just listen and make that person feel understood.
Yes, help me
then
understand.
Then it just relaxes the whole thing. And
it diffuses all kinds of intensity.
Even if the thing coming out of the boy's mouth is just the craziest, you know, I'm...
Nonsensical. Yeah. And maybe even unleashing on you personally. Yeah.
I mean, I know when I was 15, I told my dad I want to play on the Olympic volleyball team.
Okay.
Which was like 2 years away. Had I ever played volleyball? No.
What did he say?
He thought that was the dumbest idea he's ever heard. I still remember that exchange.
Oh,
yeah.
That goes back to our conversation last episode about the wound that can be caused
by
a parent.
But just acknowledging just opens up so much.
Yes, yes. Because what it does is it sets the stage for collaborative problem solving instead of fighting.
Yeah.
Right? For some kind of middle ground. And what happens also in those kind of situations, even with a teen, is that more often than not, if you're really open-minded, it will be to your advantage see a different point of view. And you're like, oh, I had never thought of it that way. And it helps you strike that balance. Yeah. And then you have a real relationship.
Yeah. Even though it's the last thing in the world you want your kid to do or the craziest idea or whatever it is.
Right.
It's that developing that safety maybe, you know, from the
space.
Teen's point of view.
Yes, a space to try out his
whatever.
He's trying to figure out how to operate in this world. He's making that bridge run into adulthood. All right, so what do we got so far? We have stop thinking of or characterizing him as the problem. Stop shaming or shutting him down. Get to the core issues. So here's number four. Facilitate opportunities for your husband or another adult male, right? If you don't have the husband, another adult male if necessary. Facilitate opportunities for your teenage son and this male, hopefully a father, but to spend lots of time together. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. What can I do as a mother? Facilitate ways. And if you can start this, if you don't even have teen boys or you still have little boys, get this relationship in to be something so regular, so consistent, so frequent that it's natural to continue even into the teen years. Because optimally, the father or the father figure will be using the time that you're trying to help facilitate to teach that teenager or that boy, even a little boy, teach them something. And you mentioned that in the last episode about teaching a skill of some kind, or they're working side by side on something or a project of some kind. Robert Bly, who wrote Iron John, a really popular book for forever on New York Times bestseller list, said, "The traditional way of raising sons, which lasted for thousands and thousands of years, amounted to fathers and sons living in close proximity while the father taught the son a trade."
Right.
Perhaps farming or carpentry or blacksmithing or tailoring. And we're not doing that anymore.
No, but how many movies are there of the son who doesn't want to inherit the farm blacksmithing
true.
Or right. whatever it
but
is?
But the point is they were working together.
And that's the
father
thing.
Father was teaching
yes,
something.
I think back to my upbringing and the different adult men that were in my life. I can name them off right now.
Really?
Yeah. All these 50 years later or whatever, who they were and why they were important to me.
They had an impact?
They really did. And my dad was around most of the time, right?
Right.
But, and I brought up the thing about the movies to say that it's really hard on the parent when you've created things and you're trying to teach and then the son decides to go a different direction.
Yes.
But that is teaching, that time is so beneficial.
That's an interesting point.
For
so
that
even
individual.
Even if they don't take to it if for some reason still.
What you think they
the
should do.
It was the time that you spent together
yes.
on it through the years.
Right.
That's the important thing.
Really help the success of the young man.
You're making me think of a funeral that I went to just, I'd say, a couple years ago. All right. So I went back to my hometown to attend the funeral of a man who had been a church leader, ecclesiastical leader that I had looked up to when I was growing up. And so I went to his funeral. And the thing that just, I'll never forget, so impressed me at this service was the family spoke. And several, he had, you know, three or four sons, and they all spoke.
Mm.
And the thing, and I just couldn't get over how they talked about what their father had taught them. That's where they went to, right? That is what, in that moment.
And I was going to say, at that time,
that moment
very
of,
critical
like, what are
part
people going to say about your life?
Yeah, right.
As a father?
Right.
What are they going to say about you as a man? What are your children going to remember about you? And if a son remembers what his father taught him.
Mm-hmm.
That is an enormous. Does that make you feel like? Does that, like, what are your sons going to say?
Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, you see that as they come into adulthood, and you see them applying certain things, or they say, "Hey, it was really helpful. You know, now look what I'm doing." And
yeah,
we talked about
right,
that.
Right.
But yeah, that's what you want as a parent, as a legacy. Maybe.
That's what you want as a wife and a mother. Because remember, this situation, both of the letter writers were concerned about the relationship between
right.
their husband
yeah.
and their son.
Yeah, exactly.
And so here's one of the things they can do moving forward is to try to facilitate opportunities. And if dads are listening, go get your husband. He should be listening to this whole podcast and the one before. Because if this kind of time together can be facilitated that's not threatening, where he's not critical of his son, he can correct him, he can teach him, but it's in that spirit.
Yeah, don't, if you're the umpire, try not to throw him out of the game
That was such a sad story. Now, when we're talking about fathers and sons, I really have to say, especially to the letter writer who had the young buck and the old bull going at it in her living room, don't be alarmed at their physicality. I mean, she was freaking out. Don't be alarmed. Think about the kid with the high testosterone. Your husband has it too. And that increased irritability and the male urge to be dominant. Mm-hmm. And that's really coming into full force in a teenager for the first time, right? That it really is something, it's not unusual, let's put it that way, for them to have some kind of face-off.
That's so true.
Because you got the teen, he's facing off with an authority figure. And we already established that it's important for teens to sort of buck the system,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so it starts with wrestling together when they're a little boy and daddy, and then it can grow into actual contests or tests of strength that are actually essential to his development.
I went through that. I remember, you know, shooting hoops with my dad. It became a competition, right? Uh-huh. You're playing horse or whatever the game is. And, you know, early on, you're just trying to get the ball more than 3 feet in the air. And then pretty soon you're beating your dad.
Yes, right? It's important.
It's very important. And I remember, you talk about wrestling, there was a changing of the guard, basically, in my household, where I finally won the wrestling match.
Ah.
In fact, I won it so bad that my dad's large, big toenail was ripped off after tossed him. If you ever had that experience, that's one of the most painful things you're ever going to have. But after that, we didn't wrestle.
Right.
We never wrestled again.
What did you gain from it, do you think?
Well, from that experience or from wrestling?
From winning that match.
From winning that match, there was it was like, I can't believe I did this. Because my dad was, he's a good-sized guy. He was a good-sized guy, right? He wasn't a tiny guy.
It had to fill you with a little sense of...
It was a lot of pride.
Pride.
It was.
Exactly. Yeah. So here's the deal. Dad, the smart dad will wipe that blood off the toenail or off his lip or wherever
it
is.
Tape it up.
Right? And say something like, whoa, nice shot, or whoa, great throw, or whatever it was that got him into trouble. And then they can watch their, you know, beaming son strut off and to the sunset and brag a little bit, because it's good.
And it's
good for the young buck.
It is good. It's hard for the dad to give that limelight,
or to admit.
Admit defeat is one thing, but for the good of the son.
Yes,
right?
For the good of the son.
It's so much more important. And I tell these stories, but I had a great relationship with my dad.
Yes,
I had
a
great father. I don't mean to throw, I'm throwing out these, some of these things, which seem
every dad makes those periodic mistake.
But that's really critical, where you, as a father, you step out of the light, basically, and let the kid shine, whether it was shooting hoops or, whatever accomplishment.
If you really, it goes against your instinct
as
a male.
Right? Or, but I would have done that a little differently.
If you understand this now and reflect on your own adolescence.
Yeah, right.
I think you could find it in you to, like you say, step aside and just have a little grin on your face and say, I'm proud of you,
son. Don't critique it. You should have gone a little to the left there.
So a solid relationship with his dad, where he's learning his place in the world or gaining a foothold in the male hierarchy, will do more to help him through the complex, volatile, biological, emotional, and spiritual transition into adulthood than anything else, capitals, than anything else. That relationship with dad is going to help him become the man he needs to be in this world just to survive, right? So here's an interesting fact. Dad deprivation, they call it. Dad deprivation has an even more negative impact on boys than girls, according to the science, and is longer lasting.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Dad deprivation.
Yeah. So as you said, whether if the father's not present, some adult positive male influence is really critical.
So we've got stop thinking of or characterizing him as the
problem.
That was your test.
Thank you.
Stop shaming or shutting him
down.
Get to the core of the
issues.
You got it.
Wow.
Wow. And facilitate opportunities for your husband or some other adult male and teenage son to spend lots of what together?
Time.
There we go. Okay.
See, I'm doing the monosyllabic teenage thing. Time issue. Well, that's
number
two.
Five. Facilitate opportunities for challenge and success.
Oh, that goes with what we were just talking about.
Yes,
right?
Very nicely.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, again, we come back to the idea that your role as the parent, is not so much to punish your teenage son, but to support them during this really crazy time. Tumultuous is the word we use. Time. So, because self-talk, that inner critic that's running day and night in his head gets really loud once puberty has set in. So you want to facilitate whatever experiences you can that will counter that inner critic when he's saying, I'm so stupid. I'm so ugly, like your acne, right? I'm not good at that. I'm not, no, the girls don't like me, whatever. You want to help find opportunities for actual life experience, not you're not ugly, you're smart, and
all that
kind of stuff really has
everybody's got their problem.
You're white noise.
Yeah.
You're white noise. They need real experience, and they need to hear that affirmation from others. Maybe you talked about all the men in your life that were sort of mentors to you. Hearing it from others
that went through
also,
it or to acknowledge. Yeah.
There you go.
Right.
Because the truth is, every teen boy says that he couldn't care less about what other people think. And his actions kind of show it. The way
and
he dresses.
And his looks. His looks kind of.
But in reality, the exact opposite is true. Teens are painfully sensitive to the subtle and sometimes not so subtle feedback that they get from their peers. Right? They're hypersensitive to that. So his self-confidence is directly proportional to how he looks in front of his peers in his mind.
So all of a sudden the teen won't cut his hair or is wearing certain clothing. A lot of that influence comes from the people that he wants to be seen.
Yes, that he wants to be accepted by or whatever. But also here's the thing. If he feels like he can't be on top, he can't be the one that can't belong or whatever, then he will pretend he doesn't care. Boy, I think of our teenage boys and that. Rings very, very true. Because really what he's doing is practicing the kind of posturing techniques that men use.
Right.
To hide their vulnerability or to get respect. So John Eldridge, that we talked a little bit in our last podcast about, who wrote Wild at Heart, says that he needs a battle to fight, an adventure to live. So that's what we're looking for when we're trying to facilitate these opportunities for success and challenge. We're helping him find a battle to fight or a adventure to live.
You teach, one of the things you teach that really resonates with women and wives especially is the man's quest, right?
For your husband has a should have a quest or
needs one and to identify what it is, all that stuff. See how it starts here?
Yes, it's
at this
so true.
Age, right?
I not
maybe
our voice.
Yeah, maybe it's not, and I know I was this way. It was this way when we were married. I figure it out. I don't know what it is, but this drive.
Right.
You know,
you're helping them experiment with different interests.
Yes, exactly.
And that's what our boys did until they really settled on them. And both of them are actually today doing very well at what they started in their teen
they
years.
Have
They're
come
in
back.
An interest that they had in their teen years that I tried really hard to facilitate. And so they could have really successful experiences, have lots of people say, wow, that's amazing what you did or what you created or to get awards even, you know, that kind of recognition. So, yeah, they started gaining that confidence early on. So, but when we're talking about him that we want to have him have these kind of successes. I have, here's my little, be careful, brace yourself, and you're going to relate to this. His testosterone is going to go into high gear anytime he gets close to competition, mm-hmm. right? The sure. day or two before the game or whatever. And you want him to have those opportunities to compete. And if he comes out on top, what's the deal? I love watching championships or something with you, but not till the very end. I just want to see the last few minutes because I want to see the win. And then I want to see how these guys react. And yeah. Their exuberance is hardly to be described when you're watching the Super Bowl or whatever, right? And so that's winning is a really natural high. It can be addictive even because it's such a rush. You know what I'm talking about. But the minute something goes wrong, watch out for that teenager because the feel-good chemicals will bottom out as soon as his dreams of victory are dashed. Now, I got to read this to you. One mom said that when her son's team lost, he was sullen for days. Even seeing his girlfriend didn't make him feel better. Mom said she didn't know which was worse, his doom and gloom when they lost or his cockiness when they won. She said, when they win, he struts around like a rooster. When they lose, he waves me off like I'm his servant.
Yeah, that is so true. And we're right now, as we're recording this, it's baseball season.
Yeah.
And the watching a team sport, if your son's playing on a team sport, it is when you go through something that's difficult and you become out on top and, you know, you're winners as a team, you know, when you have others around you that are saying it is such a high. But if you as the individual make a mistake,
oh,
that causes either the team to lose, yeah. and you know, all the reasons,
like,
they say,
I see,
you know,
I
it's
see
not
that
one
happening
play.
When we're watching TV yeah. sports, and I'm like, I do not want to be his wife
yeah.
tonight.
It is tough. It is so incredibly hard. Oh. They just, you beat yourself up over and over and over.
Okay, so that's true of a man. Now take an adolescent who
can't deal with, yeah, doesn't understand.
We established yesterday already tends to catastrophize,
yeah, that's right.
everything's yeah. life and death. And if he's made a mistake, like you say, so you have to be ready. You want him out there. You want him trying new things. You want to facilitate challenge and a battle and an adventure. You want to do all that for him. It's so, so important to his development and
yeah,
his happiness, really. But take it all in stride. He's going to have the doom and gloom when it doesn't work out. Just take it in stride. Remember the stage and all of that. All right. Remember the toddler tantrum. Okay. Number six. Tell him and show him regularly and frequently, this is a hard one, that you love him.
Love the porcupine. Hug the porcupine.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember being very, what's the word? Pixelated. I don't know. I was just so fractured and I just didn't know what to do for our teenage son at one period, one stage that mm-hmm. he was going through. And I felt like I couldn't talk to him. He wouldn't talk to me. He was so deeply moody and all of that. And, you know, I'll tell you frankly, I prayed about it. And the answer I got was to hug him more.
It doesn't.
And yeah. so I made a goal to hug him 10 times a day. And talk about a porcupine. He did not want those hugs. He just like stiffened up like a board. I didn't care. I knew it was right. And so I just kept doing it. I'd hug him 10 times a day. And it took a while. I can't tell you how long. It was at least days. It might have been weeks. But he started relaxing into it. Mm-hmm. And his tantrums, if you want to call them that, or these flare-ups, and also the isolation and moodiness really, really was mitigated. It didn't go away altogether, but it really was toned down just because I was touching him and showing him I loved him like a mother. So even if they act like they don't want it, it's the last thing in the world they want, do it anyway. The physicality speaks to him in a way that your member doesn't.
Yeah, I think the physicality is really, really important. Because even if you're saying, I love you, I love you, I love you, that can, at the same time you're saying, clean up your room and blah, 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 it becomes part of that
white noise.
Oh, by the
way,
and don't forget, the last thing in this long list of things you're doing wrong. So I think that, you know, breaking that barrier physically with the hugs and such is a great idea.
I didn't understand at the time it was a great idea, but I'm glad I followed the inspiration. So hang in there no matter what. Invite his friends into your life and into your home. Make your home the place to be.
Yeah, that's what we used to do. If they're going to be with some kids, let's have them at our house.
Yes, that's all part of showing your love. See, that's where I'm getting to.
Yeah, facilitating the party.
And Wifesavers students, who I just love most of all. Wifesavers students.
She'd give you a hug.
I'd give you 10 hugs a day if I could. Wifesavers students will know what I mean by turning toward. But that is key for just as much for a teenage son as it is for a husband in building a relationship. And that's just really lighting up like boing and being super there and interested at the drop of a hat. So it's more like, I'm here for you. It's just sending the message, I'm here for you, which means I love you.
Yeah, right.
Right? Okay. And then number 7, our last one of ideas, is keep a healthy marriage front and center.
Yeah, how much the division happens because of this.
Right. Exactly.
And I mean, the writers, the ones who precipitated this conversation expressed that.
Right. She started crying. Right. Not only is there a strain going on now between my husband and my beloved son, you know, but the strain spills into the marriage. So here's my thing. Do not abdicate your role as your husband's partner to become the middleman or your son's vigilant parent. Do not abdicate your role as your husband's partner. I get it. Parents are just bursting with stress and their communication can become so overly focused on the problem. Right, we're not going to think of it that way anymore, but the problem that is the son, that they become, the conversation becomes contaminated, let's say. Mm. All their conversations start getting contaminated.
Yeah, you're adversarial.
By criticism of each other.
Right.
But here's the deal. Criticizing each other disqualifies you both in the eyes of the team.
Yeah, that's so true. Or you have the one parent that sees it's the teen and the other parent that are ganging up, or you're protecting, you're facilitating. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is really critical of not letting it infiltrate the marriage.
So if you've got, you know, you think, oh, but I'm loving, I'm supporting, I'm showing concern for my teen. That's all great. That's wonderful. Unless it bankrupts your marriage.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
No.
Not acceptable.
No. Right. Here's the deal. It's good for the teen too, actually, for you to make your marriage preeminent over them. Because think about this. The teen world is, frankly, a little narcissistic.
Really?
Yes. They have this notion somehow that the whole world revolves around them. Remember the catastrophizing.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Center of
the
universe.
It's actually to their advantage as they're making this transition into adulthood to realize that you have a life outside of them, that they're not the center of everything. You have a life. You have needs. You have a relationship that's apart from them. And that his parents can communicate as people, not always as worried parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they're people and they can communicate about all kinds of things, not always just about him and not always just to him, but to each other. So teens should hear about your lives. And you know what is really, really effective, if you can bring yourself to do it, is to ask your teen for advice. Say,
that's interesting.
This thing happened at work today, and I really, it's blah, blah, blah. And what do you think I should do? You have any ideas? Whoa, you want to start opening the gate to real communication with your teen?
And it's
let them into your life.
Yeah, it's a real opportunity to expose the kid to
yes.
other things outside yes. their
yes.
whatever the orbit about, they're in at the time.
And that you have feelings and that mm-hmm. you have problems, and it introduces them to an adult world.
Yeah, right.
That they might have a similar mm-hmm. conundrum someday or whether. Anyway, so husband and wife, mom and dad, you're going to work together to be more effective, because that not only enhances your view of each other, husband and wife, you want to stay loving and lovers and romantic and partners. It not only enhances your view of each other, it enhances the competence of your team.
Yeah,
it's going
that's
to make
a really
them a
good
better
point.
Adult.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Which is what you're trying to get them to
right.
do.
So let's just review one more time. Make sure we got it. All right. So number one, stop thinking about or characterizing him as the
problem.
Stop shaming.
This is my one and only job here, and I'm going to do it.
You're going to do it. Stop shaming or shutting him
down.
Get to the core of the
issue.
Facilitate opportunities for your husband or other male adult and teenage son to spend lots of
time together.
Absolutely. Facilitate opportunities for challenge and success.
Yes. You took.
Oh, I'm sorry. For challenge and
thing away. Success. There. I got one job at this podcast.
And number six, tell him and show him regularly and frequently that you
are tired of his messy room. No, that you love him.
Love him. You even love that messy room. And keep a healthy marriage where? On the back burner?
On the front burner, baby.
Front
Light
and
it up.
Center. All right. So, wrapping it up. During a teen years, during teen boy time.
teen boy time. That sounds like a boy band.
Yeah, that
it's
is
a
good.
New boy band that's in out of Korea.
I just want to remind us that a boy's brain circuits are undergoing major changes, and some brain areas are growing wildly, like the limbic system, just pulsing with constant activity, while others areas are being cut back or redirected or growing very, very slowly.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like there's a whole new world
yeah,
going
it,
on.
Yeah, what it is, it's like a computer that needs a reboot with a brand new operating system, right?
Uh-huh.
You've gone from a Windows to a Mac or a Mac to
is
a Windows.
Is that even possible?
Yeah, sure it is.
Okay,
and
that's interesting.
That does a lot of interesting things. It wipes everything out. And puts a new structure in.
Mm.
And if you've ever changed operating systems as a user, it's really hard to do. Like you went from a Windows environment to a Mac environment.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, yes.
It takes some time to get used to.
Yeah, and so if I'm a parent, that's what it feels like.
Yes,
I'm going
exactly.
from a Windows to a Mac
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You got to figure, I need to click over here if I want this effect to happen.
Absolutely. Oh, that's so good. That's so good. So that transition, I love that analogy, that transition between operating systems, that's going to be rocky. We can expect it.
Yeah, you can expect a lot of calls to the help desk, basically.
That would be me, lifesavers.org. I'm the help desk, right? But what we're trying to do is get that system going and be patient through the process. Because then he's into adulthood. And if we've done this right as parents and facilitated all the ways that we discussed, then he can start to use the full force of that male brain.
And all that you've experienced will be worth it.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, honey, we can speak from experience.
That's
looking
it.
At our own boys who became young men, who became fathers and husbands, and look at what they are doing today. It's amazing. It's a joy. It's a joy to a parent. So you can get there too. Where will your son use the power that you're helping him, the good power that you're helping him to develop?
So Ramona, the talk around town is about some sort of masterclass that you've got going? Is that what I'm hearing on the underground?
And I know you don't like the part about the emotional underbelly.
Yeah, that kind of feels like I'm getting ripped open like a fish.
Well, you kind of are, but
underbelly.
It really opens women's eyes, and I think they're going to love it. All they have to do is go to wisesavers.org/masterclass.
Home is with you wherever that may be.